What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Game Over Greggy Show. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the producer. Oh my God, it's not a Heather Gray shirt.
It's not. It's my black shirt. That's my second favorite color.
Nick Scarpino, how are you?
I'm well. How are
Wearing
you?
Wearing that filthy cash. Oh, that's one of his chest hairs. You're going to pull it right through the thing.
Get it. Oh,
it hurts. Don't put it on. Oh. Yeah.
That thing can go for good money.
Over here, the Pride of Long Island, Colin Moriarty. Yeah. And over there, the pure one, Tim Geddes.
Yeah. Remember the classic, probably the best in the series film, Superman 4, The Quest
How can
of
I
Peace,
forget it?
When they took one of his hairs and made the other guy out of it.
Yeah.
Moon Man.
It was Moon Man, exactly. Moon Man. No, it was so strong that it could hold up whatever, 100 tons on that little thing, but it got cut, thing. No problem.
Yeah, they were just like
scissors or whatever. No one thought it through. Like, wait a second. The tensile strength is very, that can hold, but it can get cut.
Maybe
really
a laser
easy.
Or like some other thing could have cut through.
No, nothing, just scissors.
Some regular old scissors.
I think it might have been gardening shears, but all the same.
Yeah.
Blades. Human blades.
Yeah.
Human blades.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Game Over Greggy Show each and every week. Four, sometimes five, best friends gather around this table. Each bring a random topic of discussion for your amusement. You're off on that one. You okay?
I was focusing on the sheer volume of liquid that
there's
I'm
a lot of liquid
ingest during
liquid
this podcast.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And I'm guessing that I'm going to have to pee twice.
Wow.
I already peed once.
It's not disruptive when you pee during the show, so you should definitely try to pee as much
does
as possible.
Does that one count?
You got up last time twice, did God knows what in there, came back, and then stared into the lens of the camera
for 55 seconds. But I did it during the ad reads.
That's true. That's
I do appreciate that more than the other ad read screen caps I get where I'm reading the ad and you all just bring up your phones. Check Twitter. Check
what
whatever.
I do. That's the Twitter times.
If you like that, head over to patreon.com/kindoffunny where we post the entire show early and give you a bunch of exclusive perks and goodies if you toss us a few bucks. Thank you, Colin.
You did it.
If you got no bucks to toss, head over to youtube.com/kindoffunny where you can get the show topic by topic, day by day, until we post the entire thing the following Friday on youtube.com/kindoffunny and MP3 services around the globe. Nick.
Yes.
You have a computer out. You're all set.
I do.
What's your topic?
I have a serious topic this time. I want to talk about Sulu in the Star Trek series. And recently it came out that Sulu's character is in the next, in Star Trek Beyond, is going to be gay. Now that in and of itself is news, but the bigger news is the reaction that George Takei had to it and Simon Pegg had to George Takei's reaction. So I'm going to read you guys these quotes real quick, starting off with where the actual idea originated. And I didn't actually realize this, but Simon Pegg helped write the screenplay for Beyond, so he has a bigger hand in the character than I would have thought. The idea came from Simon Pegg, who plays Scotty in the new films and penned the Beyond screenplay with director Justin Lin, both of whom wanted to pay homage to Takei's legacy as both a sci-fi icon and beloved LGBT activist. And so a scene was written into the new film, very matter of fact, in which Sulu is pictured with a male spouse raising their infant child. Peg and Lin assumed reasonably that Takei would be overjoyed at the development, a manifestation of the conversation with Roddenberry that Takei had had long ago during the original series.
Where he wanted there to be a gay character on the
show. Yeah, he alluded to the fact that, you know, he thought that would be a good idea. But of course, back then, that was a different time. And they'd already gotten a lot of flack from the first interracial on-screen kiss that saw that had a lot of problems just as far as like not being aired in certain areas because of the inherent racism involved in that. Except Takei wasn't overjoyed. He had never asked for Sulu to be gay. In fact, he'd much preferred that he stayed straight. Quote, "I'm delighted that there's a gay character," he tells The Hollywood Reporter. "Unfortunately, it's a twisting of Gene's creation to which he put so much thought. I think it's really unfortunate." Takei later explained that Roddenberry was exhaustive in conceiving a Star Trek character, as the name Sulu, for example, was based on the Sulu Sea off the coast of the Philippines, as to render his Asian nationality indeterminate, and that Roddenberry had always envisioned Sulu as heterosexual. So that's interesting in and of itself. But then Simon Pegg sort of came back with his response, which was, quote, "I have a huge love and respect for George Takei. His heart, courage, and humor are an inspiration. However, with regards to his thoughts on Sulu, I must respectfully disagree with him. He says, quote, he's right. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that the screen version of the most inclusive, tolerant universe in science fiction hasn't featured an LGBT character until now. We could have introduced a new character, but he or she would have been primarily determined or defined by their sexuality, quote, as seen as the gay character, rather than simply for who they are. And isn't that tokenism? He later commented that Justin Lin, Doug Jeong, and I loved the idea of it being someone we already knew because the audience have a pre-existing opinion of that character as a human being, unaffected by any prejudice. The sexual orientation is just one of the many aspects, not the defining characteristic. Also, the audience would infer that there has been LGBT presence in the Star Trek universe from the beginning, at least in the Kelvin timeline, that a gay hero isn't something new or strange. It's also important to note that at no point do we suggest that our Sulu was ever closeted. Why it needed to be, it just hasn't come up before.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get your guys' take on that because where you sit with or how that sits with you, because it's kind of a complex issue.
I think Simon Pegg did a really eloquent job of explaining his piece. And mm-hmm. I think that if it was this side or this side, I'm definitely on the Simon side in the sense of
right. Like
him talking about it. He's been there since the beginning. We're not making a big deal out of it. If it was a gig, all that stuff, it's like, those are really valid points that show that he put a lot of thought into this and he's doing it for a good reason. You know what I mean? And Takei talking about the Gene originally, you know, putting thought into the characters. It's like, well, it's now 2016 and mm-hmm. they're putting the same amount of thought in these characters. Obviously there is that amount of love and care and passion being poured into this universe. And this is a modern day version of Star Trek. It's not where it was before.
Right.
And it's kind of weird to me that Takei kind of has that stance, but I mean, whatever, he has the right to do that. But I get the sense that like him being gay in real life does make it kind of weird that it's like, all right, well, now your character's gay because you're gay. It's like a weird kind of like meta thing.
Yeah, I can see where that perspective would come in, right? Where he's saying, look, I get what you're trying to do, but this character is heterosexual. He was written as heterosexual. That's what the original creator wanted that to be. Making him gay just because I'm gay doesn't necessarily jive well with him. And I can understand how he would see that.
Yeah, both mm-hmm. sides, I think, make sense to a great degree. And the one thing I would be interested in, not being the biggest Star Trek fan, I don't think any of us are in terms of anything.
I like it. I like the series, but it's not Star Wars.
I really liked the reboot, and I really liked what they did with Star Trek. And then I remember enjoying the second one, but not really remembering it. It's one of those movies I saw and forgot. Whereas I remember seeing the reboot and be like, fuck, this is awesome. This mm-hmm. is great. Since technically it's a reboot, but it's still in that timeline. You know what I mean? Like they went back and changed everything. In the show, was there ever a storyline where Sulu was pursuing a woman or anything like that?
No, they had. So apparently they alluded to the fact that he had had an affair with a one night stand with a woman, and that resulted in the birth of his daughter. But I think that was in one of the movies. Not
gotcha.
An
gotcha.
Show.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay.
But to that point, which is fascinating, which I think there's more to that quote that I didn't copy over. But I remember reading at some point he was talking about, like, since this is an alternate timeline, right? Because if you guys remember at the beginning of Star Trek, when they brought it back three or five years ago, whatever it was, it altered the timeline. So he was like, I like the idea that in all these alternate timelines, anyone
Things
can be gay,
different.
Anyone can be straight. It doesn't really matter.
Sure.
You know,
I don't think they altered the timeline. It's not like the butterfly effect, though, where like when now Sulu's
gay. That's true.
Because Kirk stepped on this thing.
That's true. But the idea of, you know, the idea of there being, I don't know.
I'm just saying, if I was a fan of Star Trek on that level and that was that thing. And I think that's where George Takei comes in, is the fact that I understand that argument, and so it's just, if there's a fact, then it kind of fucks up the fiction. That's where it would get, well, that sucks, but it's cool, but whatever.
Since we're talking about Star Trek, first, let me be the first to say Nanu Nanu to all the Trekkies out
Nailed
there.
It.
Thank you.
Now,
that was a Mork and Mindy reference for you, Tim.
You like Mork
and
Mindy?
Do you even know what Mork and Mindy is?
Yeah, Robin Williams and someone else.
And some chick.
Mindy. And Mindy.
More Robin Williams and Mindy.
The Mindy Project.
What was her name?
So I'm of two minds with this, mm-hmm. as I am with many things, because I do see both sides of it. As I've said before, I am not into diversity for diversity's sake. And actually, that's like what George Takei is talking about.
Right.
What he's saying is that, well, Gene Roddenberry's vision of this character was an Asian man of a heterosexual persuasion.
Right.
And it's his creation, and we don't necessarily need to mess around with that. So I understand that particular argument.
Sure.
The argument that Simon Pegg's making, I think, is also prescient, which is like, you are, you know, George Takei can't have his cake and eat it too, right? Like, you are a gay man, and that is, you're known for being this character, but you are actually known for being a gay pioneer. Mm-hmm. That's what you're known for, and you play that up. So you can't have it both ways, and we respect you for that. I mean, that's, I mean, he's come to prominence in the last 20 years specifically for that.
Right. He came out in 2005.
Right. So maybe, yeah. So maybe what, 10, 11 years for just being that. And that's fantastic, you know, and that's great. And I think he's funny, and I think he's eloquent. And I think he's a great guy.
Oh my.
He's awesome. He's an awesome guy. Awesome. But so I'm with Tim, where I feel like I am surprised by that. Mm-hmm. But I also am of the mind that like the character, like I would have liked to see, you know, if we want to have more diversity in terms of sexuality, which is great, and it's not within Gene Roddenberry's original idea, then I think it would have been more appropriate for them to make a new character. And I understand that you don't want to have tokenism and all that kind of stuff, but this, we can bring this to a further extent, which is Sulu still an Asian man in the,
yes.
Okay. So why isn't he a black woman then? I mean, it's the same thing. It's like,
right,
what George Takei is basically saying is like, he is what he is.
Right.
And Gene Roddenberry is famous in you know, early television sci-fi for being super progressive, like outrageously progressive. As you said, I'm not a huge Star Trek fan, but everyone knows that like Star Trek was a huge, huge step forward in television, not only for the science fiction genre, but for television generally, along with I Love Lucy and a few others that were basically saying like, this is biracial or this is all these kinds of things.
Right, right.
And so he should be respected for that. So it's almost, I don't want to say it's almost a slap in the face to him, but it's almost like, you know, he already took so many steps forward that no one else would take. And you want to like, and he already made this Asian he was the first prominent Asian character on television that anyone can even name.
Yeah.
And so, it's like, I don't know, like you need to push it all the way to the nth degree instead of keeping in Gene Roddenberry's ultra fucking progressive, ultra fucking diverse vision as it stood already, you know, like why do you have to have everything in it?
I like the idea of it. Like, and again, I think for me, it's separating the fandom from it or whatever, in the fact that I like the idea that if it hasn't been addressed or whatever, that this is the thing. And the reason we've never made a big deal or even talked about it before is just the fact that, of course, there's aliens and all these other things. Why would it be hung up on homosexuality, right? The fact that there hasn't been a gay character in the show, in the universe, is off-putting. And that's weird. But it's not, I don't need a storyline all about it shoved down my throat either. The fact, I mean, the way Simon Pegg makes it sound, for us not having seen Beyond, it's not out yet, is the fact that it seems like it's just a shot or whatever, right? Like that, and that's all it is. And like, it's getting, not blown out of proportion, but it's there as a way to honor it's okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, let me just ask you a question. You said it's why is it off-putting that there's never, I mean, like, why is that important within the realm of Star Trek, you know, like because I don't
talk about the diversity of it and everything else, and
right,
the fact so that if I'm a minority, I'd like to see myself represented on screen in some fashion, and especially if we are into this thing of, and I'm not knocking Star Trek in the 60s or whatever, I think that's hard to do or whatever, it's, you know, I mean, we are aware of,
I would say it's impossible to do.
We are aware of the steps this show took and what it did, but I'm talking about even then, it's again, not as somebody who's not even a fan, and again, like what we were talking about the last week with the whole black people versus cops and all this other stuff, of just like, it's hard for me to put them in the shoes. I've watched two Star Trek movies now. I'm in and out of the show every so often or whatever, and I've never been like, man, where are all the gay characters? It's just, but like when you call it out, it's like, oh fuck, right, this is a universe filled with aliens and all these different things, and this isn't something that's ever even hinted at. And I'm pulling what we're pulling from this thing where Simon Pegg saying that's the case, that there's never been LGBT in it. I would think, oh, that's an interesting thing to call out. Yeah, I would like to see some representation of that.
Right, but I admit that I'm arguing from a point of weakness simply because I've not given this any thought at all. I found about this literally 10 minutes before the show began. But my point here is that last week on PS I Love You XOXO, we talked about gay characters, our favorite gay characters, and I was like, I don't even know that I can name that many because... And then people tweeted at us or put in the comments, like, what about this guy? And what about this girl? And what about this? And I'm like, oh, yeah. The thing is that their sexuality isn't defining of them any more than the sexuality of a straight character defines them. And so it seems like an ancillary kind of thing one way or the other. I understand that you want to have minority representation and all that kind of stuff, and I respect that. That's fantastic. But I like, they're doing it because the man who played him in real life is gay.
Yeah.
That's why they did it. And not for any other reason. So
I'd be hoping.
It actually seems kind of, it's not tokenism by definition, but it is pandering as opposed to creating characters from stock that, you know, or from scratch rather, that are going to rise up and give a gay or lesbian or bisexual viewers a character that they can relate to on a sexual level. But I'm so maybe I know I say this as a from a place of, you know, privilege as a white straight man, but I don't, and maybe it's because we take it for granted, but I still haven't wrapped my head around completely the idea that like I have to relate to the character in every single way on screen to be able to relate to them as their fictional device. In other words, like, I don't look at, you know, the white man on screen and be like, well, he's a white man, so I relate to him.
But I think,
you know,
that's the problem, though, is like what you're saying is like, that's just because we've grown up with that, just being, that is so the norm to us. Whereas for all the other people that aren't white, straight males, like watching it, when they see all these other characters, it is different, you know, and it is like, oh shit, like that's, this represent, like, it's not just not me all the time. You know what I mean? It is
exactly.
There is something that
I get it. I just don't like, I guess what I'm saying is like, I related to Ellie in The Last of Us, a teenage lesbian girl, right? Or the, in Gone Home, same thing. Like, you kind of relate to them and kind of are interested in them. I guess what I'm saying is like, I know I've taken that for granted. There's no doubt about that. I know that I speak from a place of unimaginable privilege. I know that too. I just don't, I feel like there must be, and I guess people can sound off in the comments on this as well. In my mind, like, for as much as you want representation of yourself in many different ways, there certainly must be minorities, whether it is in sexuality or sexual preference or in race, that are like, well, but isn't that also telling me that I can't relate to what we've like to the person that's not like me because because I'm not defined by my sexuality or I'm not defined by my race. So I just like, I feel like it's so much more complicated than people make it out to be. I'm not saying these people are wrong. I'm not saying diversity in these things is a bad thing. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have a diverse and progressive outlook in the 21st century. Of course we could. We all do. We all share the same pro gay, pro choice, pro all these kinds of things viewpoint to this table. I'm just kind of making an argument that maybe it's being taken to an nth degree with this particular case and maybe with a certain other cases where
thing about it is I think that we're talking as the majority. For somebody from a minority populace to look at this, I think for sure they find themselves something that connects them to the mainstream characters, the major characters. But I think to find somebody that shares something that is so definitive for them and is so many people look down upon and is this, you know, thing that is still a huge issue and acceptance is still so hard fought for all of these different things. I think that's where it is. And I think that's the other side of it too. It's not even a gay person to look at and be like, oh cool, gay people on TV, I'm gay. It's not that strange anymore. It's also the fact of, hey, mainstream, wake the fuck up to there being gay people and it not being weird. And that is the whole point of, and that's what why I think the Sulu thing is a strong indicator as well. Not that I think that if I was going to talk about, like, man, there's so many bigots in these communities, I don't know if I would go Star Trek right up at the top or whatever. But in the way of, like,
not even close.
Hey, you know this character, you've loved this character, you've loved him for years, or you've loved him for now 3 movies. Guess what? He was gay the whole time, and it wasn't a big deal, and he wasn't weird, and he acted like a normal person because he is a normal person. What you think in the middle of America who don't, you know, you don't know any gay people, and I'm talking from my own experience being, you know, through high school till I got to college and met my first openly gay person, right? Like, I was around gay people all the time probably in high school and didn't know it because they were just normal people and didn't, maybe had to come into their sexuality or whatever. It's driving home that message that minorities aren't outcasts, they're normal, and that's the whole point of it. Like, you've loved Sulu this whole time, he's been gay the whole time, that shouldn't change your opinion of him.
Yeah, and I also think that it's not so much that they are looking at Sulu and like need to see themselves in Sulu, it's more the idea of they are minorities, they're not non-existent. And I think that having it just be like, yeah, it doesn't need to be, every character doesn't need to be gay, not every single thing needs to be represented everywhere, but having that scene, just him with his husband or boyfriend or whatever it is in the background of a shot, it's like, that is enough to just be like, that is a minority in the sense of this whole thing, but it exists and it's okay. And that's, and I think it's that sense of seeing yourself in the world, not so much in the character.
Good point, yeah.
And when it comes to the Simon Pegg stuff, I just feel like, you know, him being one of the writers on this, it's like, obviously there's a political agenda there. And I think that he is trying to say that gay is normal. It's fine. Gay is something that people are, and they're not different than you because of it. And I think that making Sulu the gay character, I mean, obviously I do think that, like, the pandering, I think it is pandering, but I also think in the good sense though of like fan service. And I think that he meant that in a way to honor George Takei, you know what I mean?
I don't think there's anything negative in what he's doing at all. I don't think any of it's negative. Sure. I'm just making a kind of an argument that I've not even fully formed in my own mind because I haven't thought about it too much, where I just kind of wonder about the other side now. I wonder about the other side, like, where it's like, well, the characters are the characters, like, make your art the way you might make your art. You know, I was telling Nick about an idea that I'm developing, that a story that I'm sketching, where the protagonist is a black man in his 30s And I wrote that not for any other reason than that's just the vision I had of that character in my head. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm going for. It's like will I be able to speak for him in an authoritative way as a white man and a 31-year-old white man? Maybe not. But why can't I necessarily write the dialogue or create this character nonetheless? That's just the character I saw in my head when I was coming up with this idea. And so I put it forth. In other words, I like the idea of creating for creation's sake. Yet Star Trek has so much lineage at the same time that and with George Takei being really one of the most notable characters to come out of that. Not the most notable, certainly one of the top three or four most notable people that have ever played any of those roles, that you can understand why they did that. And I think they're doing the right thing, because I do think that gay is normal. I think we've all known that for many years. And, and I like to see this kind of representation. I just kind of also understand, I guess, what we were talking about, what we haven't really touched on, which I think is what he was kind of talking about, what George Takei is talking about, is that these characters already exist.
Yeah.
And what is the authority of someone to rewrite those characters? In other words, if Gene Roddenberry was still alive and writing, Gene Roddenberry died, right? He's dead but nonetheless hasn't been connected to these, I don't think, in any other way than he's the creator of the series.
He was the pioneer of the series on some of the movies,
right no that I know but would he be able to take his characters and reform them or reboot them? Or probably, yeah. But at what point does a character become what the character is? And I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, I see this raging a lot in comic books with the female Thor. I don't know a fucking goddamn thing about Thor, but I know that happened. I know that Iron Man now is going to be a black woman for a little while. I know that. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. But you can kind of see the other side as well. And I do I don't mean it in any sort of mean way or anything like that to the people that are being represented by these things, where it's just but Iron Man's Tony Stark, isn't he? Tony Stark's character, right? There's nothing wrong with that either. And so I get people's attachment to these different things. And I think George, and why I'm so interested in the other side of the argument, is George Takei is representing it, where he's saying, I'm a gay man and I play this character and he's straight.
That's the thing that I think is the only real wrinkle in this, is that I completely agree with Simon Pegg and I like that they're trying to introduce a gay character into Star Trek. I think it's important. I think culturally, it's going to go a long way toward making it okay to be gay, and seen as okay to be gay on screen. Because I think that really does help shape younger generations. When kids see that, it really does have a good effect on them.
100%.
In that it just conditions them to think that's normal. That's normal. Everything's normal. It doesn't matter. But I think the only reason why this gave me pause was because they did it to honor George Takei, and George Takei told them no and lobbied against them multiple times, according to the article that I read, saying he said, don't do this. This is not the character. I played this character as straight in a time when racism it was a difficult time in the United States to be an Asian American, and being seen as a lead actor on a television show. That was kind of a hard fought battle. And if to him, I think it's they have the best intentions, but he didn't want it to happen. So if you're paying homage and honoring George Takei, then wouldn't it be therefore honoring him to just keep the character what it was before? And to me, it's not even a question of making the character gay or straight. It's just saying, don't do this because you're honoring me. If I don't want it to happen, it's not honoring me. You're not actually honoring my intentions.
Real quick, I'm sorry. From the get-go, they said this is to honor him.
Yeah, that's obvious, official, though, right?
Well, no, I know, but I'm just wondering how they've talked about it. I've heard one.
Well, that was in the quote that I
just making sure.
To me, it's the honoring thing. I didn't know about that, and I didn't know about him lobbying against it or whatever. I thought this was just the quote.
He had asked them to not do it. Yeah, apparently. And had lobbied
that.
Basically saying this is not what Gene wants.
That changes things, but at the same time it doesn't, because it's all right, well, you don't have control over it. And the thing with the honoring the character, if they did do it to honor him, that's one thing. But I think honoring, again, the fan service is a very different aspect of it. Mm-hmm. It's whether or not he wants it. I'm sure that there's a ton of people that see that and they're like, and the actor was gay. This is a cool little nod to that, what I mean?
And that's important too, right? Because you have already in the cast of characters, you have Zachary Quinto, who is an openly gay man playing Spock, who is, I guess, would be a heterosexual Vulcan.
Who's
trying to keep my terms straight there.
No,
right? Nanu, indeed.
But that's super important too, right? And they have an interracial relationship, so that's very, very important in and of itself, because Hollywood has had a problem with that, a huge problem with having gay actors play straight characters.
I didn't know he was gay.
Oh yeah, openly gay. So that's huge too. So it's kind of the last almost piece of the puzzle is having a character that is gay. And I do agree with Simon Pegg in that you can't just introduce a character, because then the criticism would be, you're just putting this token gay guy in the scene, and who is this person? And he's not going to be really a part of the movie anyway. And don't fucking put him in a red shirt, for Christ's sake, because that's just not going to be a good thing.
The other, I mean, the other piece of the puzzle, right, is the fact, and this is, again, ignorance on my part, not being that guy. As somebody on the outsides of all of this, even mm-hmm. even now, but with two movies under my belt, I feel like this only adds flavor to this character.
Yeah.
Like, right?
Yeah.
Him and Chekhov and all these other people, or Scotty, right, or whatever, they're just like... They're like literally like bones. They're all like one liners and shit.
They're there
right?
to service they're, Kirk.
Kirk is the Kirk's guy the that I know everything about, and now everybody knows I know everything about Spock and what's her name? Hulu, not Hulu.
Uhura.
Like she's in the middle where I don't know a lot about her background. Again, as somebody who knows two mm-hmm. movies, but it's like obviously Kirk and Spock are the fucking picture,
right?
And then it's like all these other guys just bounce off the ship and go do whatever. Like now they're gonna give me a scene of him hugging his husband and having a baby. It's like all right.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to your earlier point about the comic book stuff too. I mean, this does happen, but you know, the Iron Man thing, it's a whole different character. This would be changing the character, but again, it's
that's fair enough. I don't know anything about what I'm actually talking about.
No. I just want to clarify that.
I just see people see outrage. See, I didn't bring up.
It's not like she's the new Tony Stark. It's a whole new
okay. I didn't know that. Someone, so yeah, so
they're bringing in
so that. But thing. I saw people. I just see people upset about everything under the sun in comic books, and so I'm like, okay. But if they're not changing the character,
they've only had 70 years of Tony Stark. Well, there's so much more to do with
that. That was going to be my earlier point. That was going to be my point, right? Which we have had this character as a heterosexual character, since the 60s. I don't see any reason at this point. It's like, all right, you've had it, everyone. It's been, you've had that. You have a long lineage of seven movies with this character in it.
Yeah.
And how many people are like, yeah, Sulu's my favorite character because he fucking bangs chicks.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
My thing with I just feel like the respecting the character. I think that there's certain traits that define what a character is. And
that's
there's a whole bunch of other things where it's like,
yeah, it's,
so
really
him, was him being straight really a thing? Cause it
now,
sounds
Kirk,
like, all right,
is.
Great. There was, yeah,
now,
exactly.
Kirk,
Kirk
that, and
totally
that's a
makes
perfect
sense.
Example. Like Kirk's womanizing is
space
plays
STDs.
Really into his character. And that's like his insecurity. Is coming out a
but
little bit.
The
right
way
now.
I see it is like Sulu.
Yeah.
Like the color of his eyes or the shape of his eyes or the color of his hair or the way he styles his hair. Does any of that matter? Because does this actor look like that actor? No, the actors look kind of different. You know what I mean? So it's like, why do those aspects not matter, but his sexual orientation matters? Like, I think that unless there's a story plot element to it, whatever.
I agree
with
you.
It's just another like slider. I
mean, but it's weird. It peaks. Sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay.
It does pop up with me, even though like still to this day, like, and I do look internally and think I am still conditioned to like, you know, push these ideas away. Right. A perfect example of it, as I think I read this correctly, was in the new Harry Potter play. Hermione is black. And at first I was like, that is ridiculous. That is sacrilege. Then I'm like, I guess it doesn't really matter. That doesn't matter at all.
Do you care what
the character was
playing?
Never defined as a white person. It was only defined as white, a Caucasian in the movies because they had to cast someone and that person just happened to be white.
Was that Rowling's vision all along for Hermione? Was that she was black?
She didn't have a vision for her. She just said,
best actress came
this
along.
This can be whatever it needs to be.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think she's defined with the exception of, with the exception of maybe like Cho Chang and a few other characters. Like, I don't think there is really any ethnicity that's incredibly important.
Do you know who the runner-up for the role was? George Takei.
Hermione was almost an old Asian gay man.
That would have been a little weird.
Oh my, Harry.
I feel like, I guess I'm just becoming more fascinated with the other side of the more George Takei-centric argument, which I think is what he's making, which is like, I kind of think there's subtext to it where he's basically saying like, well, the character is the man who created him, envisioned him. And I don't think I think that there's some racism and some bigoted nature behind people being mad about the Spider-Man that's Puerto Rican or whatever, you know, like what, even though that's a different character too. That's why I didn't bring him up.
Or
Thor or whatever. I don't know anything about comics. I just see people getting upset about these like almost racial or sexual things in comics specifically over and over again. So I thought that was a good example. But the other side where it's like, I'm interested in how like the black community or the Latino community or the gay community or whatever feels about being pandered to as well, and when they look at something and they're like, well, just make it the way you want to make it, dude. Like, it's like I feel like it's, there's almost the other side where it's become maybe for sexuality, especially in our, I mean, we're in San Francisco, I mean, it doesn't get any more fucking normalized than it is here, which is great, but like the other side of the coin where it's like, all right, like, we don't need, if your vision has no gay people in it, doesn't really affect my life. And I'm not saying that as me as the straight white man. Sure. I'm saying that as the gay man or the gay, you know, the gay woman or whatever. And I'm interested in that kind of argument as well. In other words, like, I like the more subtle, nuanced characters that are created because there's reason to create them. And so if a movie's being made with nothing but minority characters because that is the plot device or that is the way the story wants to build, or that's just the vision and there's no reason for it at all, that's great. But like, I wonder if like in shoving diversity into every single aspect in any way we can, mm-hmm. we all also do service always to the story or to the plot. And so is this just like, as was being said before, just a distraction, even though it's this minor thing, like it's become this big thing now.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it was supposed to be an homage and that's really nice. And I'm sure it was done with good intentions. I think George Takei is being a little weird about it. I would probably, if I was him, I'd probably be like maybe privately upset, but publicly being like, you know, like supportive and all that kind of stuff. So I just think it's more complicated and nuanced than that. Like where I'm more interested in having, we're having a 2016 conversation, or we think we're having a conversation in 2016, but I actually felt we're having a conversation in like 2005. Where now, like in 2016, I'm interested in like things have become so normalized in so many ways that I'm wondering, like at what point do you just treat it as normal?
Well, the thing, I know you're going to jump on the normalized thing, but to get on it earlier, like I think one of the big things that we're not talking about here is ownership of the characters and stories, right? Where you keep saying if you have a story to tell, just tell it. Well, this is the story they want to tell, whether it's an homage or whatever. They want to put a gay person in this. How do they do that with a show that then is anchored in the 60s where there was no gay people and there were, you know, I mean, they have to do that and they have to make the changes because it's the same thing of like to the comic example, right? If, you know, they make Superman, right? Siegel and Schuster here. We have Superman. There you go. And then for the rest of Superman, he can't evolve beyond what their vision was then. So he's just leaping tall buildings in a single bound. He can't fly. There's all these different little things. They can't change the costume. They can't, it's at some point these do become. I understand. The argument here is so interesting because you have George Takei, who is Sulu, right? And who had the direct connection, who worked with the originator of the work, who wrote the character and told them what the character was, and this is how you're playing the character. But then it is in new hands. And so it is. You know, I'm the guy who's arguing about continuity earlier. It is in new hands. These people are making the movie they want to make, and mm-hmm. they have to be able to put that stuff in and make those changes.
It's a good point. And that's why it's complicated. And I'm not even sure what side of the argument I actually land on. I'm just making it the side of the argument because I'm kind of compelled by it. Like, where it's like, well, it's not just so cut and dry. I think there's more to it or whatever, more to think about. And it's so, there's so many layers societally within ourselves and within like the population at large in 2016. Where I almost feel like by calling these things out, it denormalizes them. And like, and so like, you know, I like the idea of organic things, organically fixing things or organically making things normal, because then I think it looks more normal to everyone. And then I think everyone accepts it more. But also maybe the minority and gay populations don't really have that luxury either. I think it's more complicated than that, but I'm just spitballing. I don't really know.
I hear you.
It is fiction at the end of the day. I mean, like, who really gives a fuck? I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's kind of where I'll leave my thoughts, is like, it really doesn't fucking matter.
But I think it does matter though, because I think that the fiction does kind of dictate a lot of these little kids growing up or even adults watching things, like to see that and to be like, it's normal. Like they need to accept that it's normal, you know, because it is, it's being shown in movie theaters across the whole world, you know what I mean? And
it's getting to people where it isn't normal.
Exactly. Right. And I think that you know, a long time ago, it's not too many people were complaining or were saying that there's not enough white people in movies, you know what I mean? And then over time, now it's turned into this thing of there's too many white people in movies because they're taking what could be other minorities' roles and stuff. And I think that what you're talking about, the 2005 versus 2016 conversation, is I think it does need to swing really extremely in the other direction to normalize it eventually, to get it to a point where it is like, oh no, everybody's being represented in a way that makes sense, that's doled out however it needs to be. Because I think the problem is you brought up that you feel like maybe they feel like they're being pandered to too much or whatever. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the equivalent of I got a black friend. He says it's cool if I say the N-word. We're cool. We're cool. Right. You know, and it's like, just because he does cool doesn't mean that there's so many other people that don't. And the problem is no one person represents it all. And I think that is the challenge, is trying to figure out how to solve for the greater population instead of the one-off things. Because, I'm sure there's people that are like uncomfortable I'm sure there's gay people that are uncomfortable by all of this, where it's just like, fuck, why is this being such a big deal? Why is this either happening or not happening? But I feel like it needs to happen so that one day it won't happen.
That's a good point. I think you're right on everything you said, both sides of it. Because I do think I'm as normal, I guess, in American society's terms, in terms of entertainment, as that it is, right? I'm American, I'm white, I'm male, and I'm straight. So I have nothing to worry about in this regard. But and I don't I look back, I was thinking for some reason G.I. Joe came to mind to me because I think about the minority representation in that show. And some of it was really well done. Like Roadblock was one of my favorite characters and he was just a black guy. Right. Like he was just a black guy like all the other Joes like Duke and Flint, and all those other guys. But then there was like Spirit, who was like the old Indian shaman man. And there was like Quick Kick, who was like the Asian karate expert.
Yeah.
And there's like, and so I'm like, all right, like it's a little, all right, it's a little like.
Also, one could read into a black man being called Roadblock as being slightly racist as well.
But. Really? I don't know. I always looked at him as being like.
Can I get a minority report on Roadblock, Kevin? I need a minority report on Roadblock being black.
I don't know. I don't see it.
Thank you, Kevin. So I'm not saying like I've kind of.
What if we call the Peruvian character Lomo Saltados?
The Lomo Saltados, and he has a handgun and an eagle, like spirited. I've waged this whole argument in my mind, or this whole battle in my mind, where I'm like, I just don't know exactly where I come down on it, because there's no doubt that diversity in fiction has been positive for disparate sections of society, but actually for fiction itself, which I think is fantastic as well. I think that's often lost on a lot of people. Like when I played The Last of Us, I wasn't thinking about Ellie as being a little girl. I thought Ellie was just the compelling character that was right. Having to be a little girl, and then we found out she's gay in the DLC and stuff. So I like that there's like these little nuanced kind of things, and Gone Home is an example, an overall example of the same thing, where you don't even know what the story's about originally, and then it's about something you don't expect and you can relate to those characters. And so I guess what I'm saying is that as a white man, I never felt the need to relate to white men in my fiction or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yet I also think, admittedly, there is a subconscious thing in my mind where I'm like, you have nothing to worry about, Colin, because if you really needed to relate to someone on that base level, just look around.
Right. Exactly.
You know? So I admit that's there. But I am interested in such, and we've become so progressive in such a quick time in the United States in some ways. I mean, what's going on with race in this country right now shows that we're not quite as progressive as we'd hope. But I think with sexuality, particularly, if you look at polling and you look at different results around the states with gay marriage and all those kinds of things, and how quickly that turned rapidly, like within a decade. It turned around completely. That I just was wondering if, like, I do wonder if the gay population at large, I wonder if the black population at large, maybe not individuals or little sections of them or pockets of them, are now saying, like, okay, like, we just want to be treated like we're normal, and we don't need to be represented in every single thing to be treated as normal, to be normal in society. And that we're actually creating conversations that are not necessary, that could be regressive in making that kind of representation normal, and where it really counts, which is in the real world. So that's kind of the argument I'm trying to make, but I don't know whether it's a salient argument or not. I just think that it's an interesting kind of take on it that makes it not so cut and dry, and I think it's kind of where he's coming from, not from so much of the fictional device that he's talking about with Gene Roddenberry, but also about as a gay man in America, and he's one of the most prominent gay men in America today. So So that's kind of where I stand on it, but I just don't know. I'd be interested to see what people say in the comments, because I think this is more complicated than it seems.
My topic. But first, thank you to all the Patreon supporters in June for all your lovely support. Whose name do we have to see in there like four times?
Jordan Smith.
We apologize.
Somehow Jordan Smith has been cut out of the last
Jordan
few
Smith,
ones.
Atlanta Jordan?
Yeah,
Atlanta
Jordan. Gonna put it in
I don't
like
know.
Why.
He's one of the
on
best supporters,
one.
But Nick has been systematically
cutting
him out.
We got you on games, but for some reason, yeah, I'm sorry, but I didn't stay on that list. So we'll get you in there about 18 times this time. It's the last 30 names are just going to be
Jordan Smith.
Now, I'm going to push him once. I'll get you in this time.
My topic. He's pulled from the headlines of Greg's life. First dates. We all know I'm single.
I've been ready to mingle.
Sure.
Going single on. And ready to mingle.
You can be my hype man. You can walk around and say these things. And
Did I that right?
I guess. I don't know.
That was the saddest woo I've ever heard. It made me like cringe.
It was a Ric Flair.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, no.
Is that why saying who?
Oh, it's woo?
Yeah.
Well.
It's okay. You got time to.
Can I try it again?
Yeah.
Woo!
All right, that's better. That's
oh, no.
Better.
I mean, no, it's no, still it's not good. Better. It's better.
How does the hair look when I do it?
Woo! It goes I don't know why it bothers you so much. It like makes my balls go inside.
Jesus.
That's my balls have been inside this entire show.
Yeah, I've been doing that since birth. Oh,
so I want to know what makes good first dates. I want to hear good first date stories. Tim, what makes a good first date?
First date makes a good first date. Yeah? First dates, to have a bad first date, you need to really, really. Try. You're two people going in wanting to like each other.
Sure.
I think it's one of those things where it's you're going to have a good time. You're going to be absolutely infatuated with the experience because you're either talking about you a lot or hearing about somebody
you're
new
learning
a lot,
about
right?
somebody brand new.
either way, you're presenting your best self. You're trying to be funny. You're trying to, you're thinking about every action you're doing. And I think that you stop doing that every date afterward until you get to a point where you don't think at all. And you're just
shitting with the door
open. There. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Happened this morning.
Well, that's how we communicate.
There is definitely something special about first dates, but it's funny. And I have a lot of friends who go on a lot of dates, most of them being first dates, most of them being last dates. Mm-hmm. But those dates kind of, there's no downside to it. It's like even a bad first date is usually still a good experience.
Sure. Good story.
If you really don't like the person, then you're like, all right, cool. I wasted an hour, 2 hours, whatever it is. You know, if it's really, there's very few times I've heard people be like, I like left. I was like, not into this. There have been those stories.
I don't know if you've been on enough first dates, because I've had plenty of bad first dates.
I've had a fair amount, and like, but I'm mainly talking about all my friends' experiences.
Right. I've had some bad ones.
But we're not doing that, because for the record, we did casual dating on 5/14/14 and worst dates ever on 8/26/14. Mm-hmm. One of those was the Alexis episode. And you told the one about how you went out with somebody. You're just like, this isn't good. Do you want to go get a drink? You're like, I was like, nah. You're separate ways.
And that's happened. I mean, like the worst part of it is when you realize you don't like the person.
So what makes a good first date then?
So what makes a good first date is, well, first, ensuring that the person actually wants to be on a date with you, because I've made that mistake.
That's trouble.
Where I'm like, you didn't think this was a date, did you? That's bad.
Well, that's not a first date then.
It is what you thought it was. Like when you ask someone, hey, do you want to go grab dinner with me? And they say, sure, that sounds great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you get there with the flowers and the candy.
And then you get there and they're like talking about their boyfriend. You're like, oh, I did not clarify. This is my bad. I did not clarify.
No, I was talking about it. Christine and I's first date.
I'm talking about something very different.
Christine and I's first date, we went out or whatever. And I took her she liked desserts. And so we went to Citizen Cake. Remember Citizen Cake? Closed up now. It's very sad. We went down there or whatever. And the check came. And I grabbed it. And she's like, oh, you want to split? I'm like, no, that's a first date. I'll pay for it. She goes, is it? And I was like, oh, shit, fuck. I thought we made this clear. And we had this whole conversation. Where she's like, I thought you were joking. And I'm like, why would I joke about that? And da, 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 da.
Yeah, people, you have to clarify that first and foremost. And I know that you sometimes think that you have, but sometimes it's not.
No, that's a very, very good point. I take back everything I said if you're talking about a friend that is now being turned into a potentially first date. No, I'm talking about Tinder. I'm talking about you're at a bar and get someone's number.
Sure, that's the first date. Great, yeah.
Those are first dates. And those, flawless. Like, I really don't think you can fuck that up, unless it's bad, in which case you move on. But still, I feel like it's a fun first date.
Sure.
No matter what, you get to think about where you're going, what you're going to do. You're constantly thinking about, where's this going to go next? I'm about to get my dick sucked.
Jesus!
Or not, right?
You escalated so quickly, too.
Maybe you guys are just going to talk all night.
That's not quickly escalating, Greg. If you ain't escalating that quickly, you ain't doing it right.
Jesus, God. Right. Oh, my God.
The game only has so many innings, if you know what I mean. And then you fucking die. Sports.
No, you nailed it. You nailed it.
To me, I'm with you on that one, right? So the excitement of meeting someone and being and having that, when you've obviously figured out that it is in fact a first date and that person is as excited about going on the date as you, is great. I think it's an awesome opportunity to show this person, especially if you're the male and you were the one that did the inviting, who you are and what you like, right? So, you know, I took my wife on a first date to this Indian place that I loved. Down on, I think it was on Folsom. I don't know if it's still there. We haven't been back because it's laden with carbs. As I literally come,
he's allergic to carbs.
Haven't been back.
They hurt the ice cream scoops
in 5-6 years. But it was great. I was like, I asked her one simple question. I'm like, do you like Indian food? She's like, yeah. I'm like, great. I'm gonna take you to my favorite restaurant. And we spent the entire we spent 3 hours longer there than we had to, just talking and drinking and enjoy the food. Like, you don't even eat really. You're just like kind of trying to whittle away in between sentences. You don't want to be rude, and you're just infatuated with this
all
person
you're thinking
next to you.
About is her sucking your dick.
I mean, that's all I ever think about.
I don't understand how you're so much cruder on this show than Love and Sex Stuff. Jesus.
Because Love and Sex Stuff, I have a responsibility.
Yeah, that was a fucking creepy ass laugh you did there too.
They both have creepy ass laughs.
Some fucking super villain laugh.
There's only so many innings, then you die. Colin, what makes a good first date?
I don't think I've ever been on a first date. When I was really thinking about this, I don't think that's ever happened.
Then how do you count your relationship?
I've been in probably
dorm room and they have sex with them.
I've been probably half dozen relationships in my life, like real relationships, and they all. I mean, like my girlfriend in high school, I met when I played hockey. She was a figure skater, so I met her and I knew her.
I like that movie.
So exactly like that movie.
You know what I'm talking about? The one. What is it?
Blades of Glory.
No,
Blades of Glory.
And then it's really not important. And then my girlfriend in college, for most of college, I met when I was a freshman in my freshman dorm, and
I did it. You meet them not on a date, but then you go out with them at some point, right?
Those are first dates, though.
Yeah, that's not what I'm saying. Like, I already know, like, that nullifies the ability to go on a first date, which is fine with me.
I agree.
And so, and then I dated another girl in college that I, for a little while. And then, yeah. And so, like, for instance, like with Aaron, I knew Aaron for 13 years when we started dating. So it's like, we don't have a first date. Like we go on dates all the time. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you have that classic, like, I'm getting to know you first date and stuff. It's like, we were like, I know her better than almost anyone in this world. So it's like,
at some point you said, hey, do you want to, like, get together?
Sure. And we went out and we had a great time. We just went and did it. We do what we do all the time when we go out, which is we go out and we have good food and good drinks, right, and we laugh. And that's like, and I found finally someone who, like, actually accepts me for who I am, which is really nice.
She's a saint. She should get
it. She sure is.
I was talking about the comedy drama / sport movie, The Cutting Edge.
Topic.
That's what you wanted me to. You wanted to say Topic for me to jump.
Famous quote from that movie.
I don't remember the movie.
You consider yourself a cutting edge?
I don't.
I am a diehard D.B. Sweeney fan, my friend.
So what I'm saying is, like, I don't think I've ever been on that classic, like, oh, I mean, like, I've never, like, met a girl, given her my number or gotten her number or whatever, and then, like, and then we meet. So I've never, not once, never has that happened. And, you know, thankfully, I'm those days are behind me now. So it's like, I think I've gone through my entire life without having done that. But yeah, Aaron and Maya's first date was awesome. I mean, we actually went out with her and her cousin, and we had, like, we fucking laughed and laughed. It was like, it was an awesome time. But again, I don't consider that the classic first date, you know, like, mm-hmm. I just don't consider that. And I think when I look back at, you know, other relationships, I don't think I ever had that classic first date, because when I was in high school or college, I was fucking poor. I wasn't going on dates. And, you know, like, we would hang out at each other's houses, or, like, you know, go to the movies or do something like that. But I don't actually remember any of that shit. Like, when I actually think so back funny. At, like, those relationships, I have no fucking idea what we did. You know,
I remember probably all my first dates. Like, I remember the first girl I dated in high school, like, seriously dated. We went miniature golfing, and it was me and my buddy was dating her sister.
Your buddy Stu?
No, it's actually my buddy Ryan, who we actually became really good friends because of that, because he had mentioned that she liked me. And I was like, no, this is actually... I'm gonna take a step back here.
Here we go. Give me a little bit of background.
So going into my junior year, I became drum major, right?
Yeah,
and I believe that was the year where I decided. Sophomore year is when I was assistant drum major. Still had the ponytail. Junior year, my band director was like, "Fine, you can be drum." I had to fight to be drum major. I was clearly the best, but he wanted to keep me on trumpet because I was also clearly the best on trumpet. Well, Clay was better, but it doesn't really matter.
Fuck you, Clay.
Going into that year, I was like, "Fine, I'm gonna get serious about this." I dropped weight. And I cut my hair. And coming back into band camp into my junior year, I finally got the attention of one of the drill team girls.
You open the door and it's like that slow motion walk, and they're all like, who's that?
We were sitting at the table and I was just being my normal goofball self. And then later my buddy Ryan comes up to me and he's like, hey, she kind of likes you. And I was like, yeah, she's cool. And he's like, no, she likes you. I was like, oh shit. Like, it was that panic second where I'm like, this girl's good looking. And, like, you know, in high school, you're like, yeah, you're very superficial. I mean, she was a very nice girl, but I was like, she's hot as hell. And if I date her, that will be dope. So he's like, what do you want to do? I was like, I don't know. I don't even know how to do this. I've never actually, like, done this before. And he's like, I'll tell you what. We're going to get a double date together. And I'll set it all up. Don't worry about it. I know the girls like miniature golfing. You just come along. And that way, it's all goofball. No one's good at it. You don't have to be good at it. You don't have to be bad at it. Just have fun. And we went out, and it was a fucking blast. And I ended up dating her for, like, 8 months.
Oh, nice.
Super sweet girl. Super sweet girl. And then she died.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, she's still alive, so because I Facebook stalk her.
But how many kids?
What's that?
How many kids?
No, I don't actually Facebook stalk her. Can't find her.
She attempted Facebook stalk at least.
You guys are on another level today.
I know, it's fun. I got sleep last night. But that's that, you know, that was fun. That was a very, that's like imprinted on my brain. I'm like, that was a great night, right?
Sure.
That was a night where I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen here. I'm just trying to be the best version of myself possible. And she's laughing. And for some reason, she keeps looking at me. And I think we're going to make out. And then we're making out. And I'm like, this is awesome. I'm making out.
Yeah.
This is the best thing ever. And I'm like, no, I'm cool with this.
I mean, to the point, I mean, what Tim said and a bit of what Colin was, you know, putting in examples of, like, I agree of what works about a first date, right? And I never meant it as the classic somebody sliding you a napkin with their number. You've never spoken to them before. The first date you go out with somebody where you are so interested in each other and what their stories and their experiences and what their lives are, because it's all brand new.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you and I go out to dinner now and we just fucking stare at the TV. We got nothing to say to each other.
But I've really never, I guess what I'm saying is, like, not that I've just been in, you know, a handful of relationships or whatever, but I guess what I'm saying is, like, I've never just gone out with someone I just randomly met. I already knew the person, like, every time. Like, so it's that's what I'm saying is like, it's just different, you know, like what I'm saying is like, I'm out of that particular game. I've never had that particular experience of being like, I don't really know you. We like each other and we go out on a date, whether I was in high school or college.
So how do you define how well you know somebody then? Cause I've never like just seen somebody at a bar and been like, you want to go out tomorrow or something. I've talked to them. I've known them through friends of friends or whatever.
No, pretty well. I mean, like I don't know. I guess maybe it's cause I'm a little bit shy in those kind of social situations where I guess I don't know. I just don't have that much experience in it. So I just brood
in the corner and like, who's that brooding beautiful
man? Who's that brooding beautiful?
Like when we were at MomoCon, what? Was it MomoCon, right? Where we went to that party and called him like Red Dracula on a couch.
That was hilarious.
It was great. It was a great book. I hadn't read in a while.
There's nothing that makes me happier than the idea of you and Aaron going on dates. We had nice food, drinks, and we just laugh and laugh. Like, that vision is just so funny to me.
That's the funny thing about, well, that, like, Aaron and I connect on like this level I've never connected with anyone before, where it's like, you know, and we did in college, which is so funny. Like we probably should have been dating for a very long time. It's just that the timing never worked out or whatever. Where like she really like makes me laugh, like from my gut. And like, I make her laugh. Like that's like a big piece of our relationship. I think is our humor, or just like, not even when we're actively laughing, when we just like, we're just having a genuinely good time with each other. Like it's not like any other relationship I've ever been in, which is why I really want this to be the end of the road, because it's like, you know, I don't know. Like, you always have to kind of try or adjust certain things and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I just don't really feel that way in this relationship, which is like really nice. Like, I'm a fucking weird dude. I know that. I'm not oblivious to it. I'm quirky and like, like weird shit. And like, you know, like do all sorts of, you know, I'm into politics, but also music. I like to write, but I also like video games. I like to have someone that like doesn't try to change you, but tries to like be with you and understand you and like actually take interest in anything you do at all, which is fucking totally new to me, is exciting. Yeah. You know, and like really nice. Like I was making the joke and calling Greg live. I like turned to her and like just smiled the other day when we were like, I was on my phone in bed and she was playing Vita. She's playing Foul Play on Vita, and she literally said, "Why would anyone want to play on an iPhone? Like, I don't understand why anyone would play on a phone when you can play on one of these." And I looked at her and I'm like,
"Marry me."
It's not even important to me that she plays video games or doesn't. She really doesn't. She's like playing them because she's more into them now. She didn't know what video games really were, sure, or how they've adapted until we started dating. But just the fact that she says that about that, I was like, this is so funny, man, because she really means it. That's the other funny thing. And I'm like, this is so funny. Service. So it's just, so that's like a different kind of situation for me than I've ever been in before, where it's a much more comfortable situation. So when we go out, I'm not really trying to do anything, you know, like.
Oh, sure. Just, yeah. That's long gone.
Last date, not first date.
So, what about you, anyway, Gia? Where do you count your first date?
So, I mean, what's funny about that is we never had one because of that type of situation where it was like, it was already like we hooked up like the first day we met. So it was just like, all right, cool. First date goes out the window kind of after that.
Because we met at the 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
And they ate a hot dog, but not the bun.
The problem is, the first date that we had was then like, so she is best friends with my best friend's girlfriend, who's also one of my really, really fiance now. One of my really, really, really close friends. So we just ended up hanging out, and then we all hung out after that. So it was like our first date after like meeting was all of us hanging out. We went to get burgers somewhere, and it was just like whatever.
Go Big Jenny. So
then a couple weeks in, then we like kind of
McDonald's.
Then it was just like, all right, we're together. Like that, like we had the talk. We DTR to find the relationship.
Nice. How long?
You got to do that. I don't remember the timeline.
Sorry, I thought
things moved fast.
Okay, right
there. But probably like a couple weeks in, it was just like, all right, cool, this is a thing. But then like I made a joke out of it where I'm like, I'm gonna take you on our first date. Like, we never did that. So yeah, then we did this thing, but that's not really a first date. Then I just fucking went all out and did some dumbass bullshit Tim plan, because that's what I do.
Yeah.
Kevin helped out. Set up that hotel room. Yeah. It was great.
The first date was a hotel room?
Well, it ended in a hotel
room. Someone had to put the chains and all the like,
he put a whole bunch of shit in there.
Oh, they were doing the 50 Shades of Grey thing.
Yeah, you gotta.
That's the thing about Tim Geddes. I'm sorry, Kevin wants to chime
Greg,
in. Yeah.
You ever want to impress the shit out of a girl?
Yeah.
If you ever like,
he's very authoritative about this.
Hey.
Yeah.
This is date number, like, say, let's say date number five, date number whatever. But you're like, hey, let's do something awesome. We got you, boy.
We got you.
Ooh, we're gonna do real
good
great
at that shit.
Wait, do you have like a plan ready to go? Or is
We've
do you want to run me through one of the packages?
Here's the problem. We can't run anything packages because it's private shit, because then everyone knows. Do you know how many girls are out there that you're going to date one day, Greg Miller?
No.
Probably at least two to three. So I don't want them to hear this and be like, Oh, doing the tier two plan. I thought I was at least a tier one.
Oh, good point. I got to save the platinum package.
Tier structures?
Oh my God, yes.
Jesus.
That's the other funny thing about relationships in this particular relationship with Erin is that, like, you know, you just kind of, when you really do care, I think this is where you're at too with Gia, when you really do care, like really, really care, mm-hmm. and like really, really are into it and really, really like quite,
smitten.
Smitten, that's a great word or whatever. Yeah. You really do your best for that person no matter what, like, yeah. to like, you know, not, no boring shit, no, because I'm a very boring person, right? Like, I'll sit at home and play fucking Vita and...
That's exciting.
And watch 30 for 30 all day if I could.
Yeah, that sounds like a great
Allen Iverson one yet?
Huh?
You watched one about Allen Iverson?
Yeah, I did. I watched that one.
Yeah, that's cute up for me.
The one question I mean, because we've somehow dodged this completely is I want to hear about Greg's. How many first dates have you been on in your free
in my life?
No, not in your life. I don't even want to know about anything but this post. This new single life.
Okay.
This post relationship.
New 52, Greg.
Oh, the new 52, yeah. Where they've rebooted the universe, but I still have Portillo, which I'm always a big fan of. Yeah, and Kevin and I are really good friends.
Shit.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of shit. It's disturbing.
It's true. We've gone from like before, like I was Clark and he was Jimmy Olsen, and like I was like his mentor. And but now we are new 52, Clark and Jimmy, where we're besties. We're texting each other. We're going out to dinner. How you doing, Kev?
Pretty good. You didn't tell me to turn up the rock and roll.
No, that was Death and Return. That's different. That turn it off. What a stupid thing. You remember this?
No.
You remember this? No. They kill Superman, right? He comes back, Colin. I'll skip all the cyborgs and all this stuff, right? He comes back. It turns out, Colin, that they had given away his apartment, of course, because Clark Kent, they thought, was dead. Turned out they lied and just said he was buried under some rubble and he got out fine. Still had all his muscle mass. It was a very interesting way of how that would possibly be a thing. But so Clark has to move in with Jimmy. And so for them to show you that Superman is still hip and young, kids. When he comes in to start moving in, Jimmy gets all sad and he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'll turn down the music for you, Clark. I was listening to some heavy metal." And Clark goes, "Turn it up, Jimmy." And that was it. That's when people were like, "Holy shit, Superman's on another level."
I was listening to Jimmy Olsen's Blues this morning, by the way. Anyway.
Oh, where are you? Pocketful of Kryptonite. What a great album there.
Spin Doctors, New York City's own.
I've been on one first date so far, and I'm going on another tonight.
Another first date.
Yes, exciting. Yeah. This is exciting.
What precipitated the first date?
Damn, precipitated.
And then what precipitated?
Big fan.
The second.
Why you hold
first
that
date
like it's coming out of you?
Okay. Whoa.
No.
Oh, that's gonna hurt your teeth. No.
Don't.
I can't even look at that. I can't even look at that. It's lead.
Yeah, it's lead.
What precipitated the first date? I had met her at a friend's gathering.
Good first step.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, "You're cool." And she's like, "You're cool." And then we didn't talk for a while. And then Instagram DM hit off a conversation. It wasn't like that. It wasn't like a Tim DM.
No, it was.
Did you DM her a picture of your
No,
that's
penis?
The whole point is what I'm saying.
That's not what I do.
Do you, when you meet a woman, do you immediately tell her they have a small dick so she doesn't get disappointed later?
I like to set the bar low, kind of funny. Mm-hmm. We just set it at low expectations. And then if they ever see it, like, oh, this isn't
that
bad.
And then when you're about to have sex, you have to go through your drawer and you're like,
"Let me get the baby condoms.
Can't find them here.
I got the jeweler eye out. Yeah. I got the jeweler eye out."
Huh? Shut up, Kevin. How's that for a microphone?
What was that? Oh, you weren't using the microphone? I got you.
I can hear him. That's all that matters.
And then a similar thing with the second first date, just somebody I've met before. And now we're both single.
So what is your expectation of the date tonight? And I don't mean sexually.
I expect to marry that person.
You think so?
Yeah. If I like him enough to date, no, I don't expect to marry him every time I go on a first date.
I believed you.
Because I mean,
I got those Midwest values.
I always sort of went into all my first dates hoping that it would play out like you like the person so much you don't want it to end, right? And so you do that thing where you keep finding things to do. Like, she's like, "I guess it's getting late." You're like, "Yeah, I mean, I could go for more drink if you want. Oh, let's go for another coffee."
Sure.
Whatever, dessert, yada, yada, yada. Anything to kind of hang out with
you
each other a little
over
bit longer.
In front of her house and you're like trying to find a reason to talk, and then 4 hours later you're still parked in front of her house.
Yeah, exactly, right.
That's the weird thing about being adults in San Francisco, just not having a car.
Mm.
You guys have cars, I guess.
You walk.
But just like, I remember that like in high school, yeah, going out on dates or whatever, and like, you know, you pick somebody up and you're like outside psyching yourself up, and you get out of the car and walk to the house, bring it back, da da da. And then like a little bit in college, but it was like, all right, see you at your dorm or whatever. And like, then yeah. Now, I mean, I'm brand new to being single, just meeting people. But I mean, the last round of singlehood when I was an adult person, same thing of just meeting people's places.
It's the same general concept, right, though? I mean, like, you're still trying to figure out, like, you're still picking her up. potentially, unless you're meeting her there. But
you're going to get that Uber black car?
Yeah, get that Uber black car. Go pick her up.
Oh, no,
get that
I'm meeting people. I'm
get
meeting
that Uber black car.
You don't pick people up in an Uber.
Get an Uber XL black car.
I want like a giant limo. Stretch limo that when you go into, it's like a prom limo. And it's like one bottle of really shitty
I mean like the ruffled tux. I got a corsage.
Go in the other direction and show that you're an everyman. Uber
pool.
Hey. That,
caller, I'm gonna drop the pin right now. Can you do the same thing? We'll try to get in the same pool.
Love it. See, now that's where it's at, though. That's I'm a big fan of the like, let them figure it out. They're empowered people. They will do their thing. They'll meet you where you're going, unless you have a car. Then pick them up.
See, the problem is this, though. Like, the car was genius because the car got you one step closer to being inside the house or the apartment.
I thought you were gonna go somewhere else with that.
No. Or you could, I mean, you could do stuff in the car too, yeah. Right?
I'm not
a strong advocate of sex on the first date. I've only done it a handful of times. It tends to result in marriage.
After all that Indian food?
It's a lot of booze involved.
It's a spicy meatball.
No, but I'm not a huge advocate of like of having sex on the first date. I think it kind of can complicate things, right? There's a lot of feelings and emotions that you're having. Having said that, though, if that is your goal needs to be getting close to some place where you can do that. And sometimes it's easier to do that with a car than it is with an Uber because you have to define it, right? Like, hey, where are we going next? I guess I'll order an Uber. Do I need to order an Uber too? Or are we Ubering to the same place, which is my pants?
Whoa!
Is that happening? Yeah. Does the Uber driver drop a pin in there? Can they just see the flagpole from 20 yards out?
Uber pool. Whoever's welcome.
I do recommend an Uber pool, though, because how fun would that conversation be?
No, like, that's fantastic.
On a first date. This is hilarious.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
That'd be awesome.
No, that's awesome.
Every day you get the Uber up from there. So you start with Uber pool, and then you go like Uber... you go Uber,
just regular Uber X,
and then Uber yeah. like whatever the fuck
taxi,
it is.
They got Uber taxi.
Uber taxi, yeah. And then you got
and then black car.
Then you call like fucking call an Audible and you get on in a Lyft one date. Then you go back to Uber and you get in the Uber XL and the Uber Black. I like that. Just a war of escalation.
Right.
I like that too. I like that too.
Thank God you're done. Thank God you're off the market
for everyone involved. Thank God
across the board.
Colin,
yeah.
What's your topic?
Gambling. Aaron and I went to Las Vegas for the second time in 6 or 7 months. She and I went. And what I find, she really likes going to Vegas. And I like Vegas too, but for different reasons. Like, I like just being in casinos. I didn't really, I'd gamble every once in a while, but yeah. I like just being there. I like smoking. I chain smoke like you wouldn't even fucking believe when I'm in a casino. Just constantly smoking, always. What I realized the last few times I had went, I've always kind of been into gambling in a very minor sense. Like I play when Nate still lived here, Nate Ahern. We used to play
poker nights.
We
right?
did poker nights like every other week, every 3 weeks for years. So like
I was
we
never
would,
invited.
Of course you weren't. But those were low stake games, $20 each. You'd win $200 if you won or something like that. It's nothing to really lose. We did fantasy movie league. We bet $100. The most serious gambling I do is in that fantasy football league with my uncle and his friends, where you can lose a lot of money, but no more than usually like $500 or something like that. And you can win an asinine amount of money in the league, like $5,000. So, but I kind of like have started to pay closer attention to gambling culture the last few times I'd gone there and like what it is to gamble. And I got lost at a blackjack table myself one night for like a long time. And realized that, man, I get it now, I got it in such a way where I'm like, I can't do this anymore actually, because it's not even that I'm trying to win. It's that I'm trying not to lose. So I'm never worried about like losing thousands of dollars. It's not gonna happen.
Right.
It's just not gonna happen.
It's just the constant exercise and anxiety. She's like, God damn it, I don't want to lose $5 again.
So Aaron and I were sitting at like the $15 blackjack table both nights, like one of them, which is like we were staying at the Venetian. That's like really the lowest you can possibly play for. Other places you can play for like $10, maybe even less. But people play for $25 a hand, $50 a hand, $100 a hand. So we're not playing at those tables. Like, I'm playing literally with $100 to begin with. So I can play 6.5 times or so,
right,
without winning, and then I bust. And I really found it to be an amazing experience. Now, Aaron's like really good at blackjack. And what I realized was that this game, first of all, takes actually quite a bit of skill. And second of all, everyone knows how to play. Everyone knows like what the idea is to get 21 or get as close to 20 as possible. But it is so much deeper than that.
Yeah.
And like I learned that through her and through like you're sitting at like tables where like no one really seriously is playing. So the dealers are like very friendly and they'll like help you and be like I'll ask them over. I'm like, what does the book say? You're showing an 8. I have 14. They're like, you should assume I have a 10. You should hit. you know, like over and over again. I learned like all of this random shit that I can't believe I didn't know about blackjack. Like, I always thought that the blackjack dealer was playing the hand, but they're like, no, the blackjack dealer plays until he hits 17.
Yeah,
that's it.
He has to stop.
And I'm like, I didn't know that. I thought that they were like trying to take your money. They're like, no, actually, the blackjack dealer is like totally ambivalent. Like, it doesn't matter. The blackjack dealer is like one of the few dealers that doesn't really give a fuck if you win or lose. They want you to win because you're tipping them. So like, it's
right.
So I was like, oh, it's very interesting. So so there's a few cool aspects that I learned about gambling in Vegas that I never really experienced before. When Erin and I were there, and I'm thankful. I'm kind of thankful to her that she introduced me to this kind of stuff, which is. A, like, there's an interesting camaraderie at a table, especially when you sit there for hours and hours, where you meet people. People are coming and going. People are busting and making a shit ton of money, you know, like all around you. We sat with this guy named Mark, who from the East Coast, who was just there for the UFC fights. And he sat with us for like 5 hours. We just get to know the guy. We're ordering drinks. I'm chain smoking Black and Milds. I can't like barely breathe the next day. I was chain smoking so many Black and Milds.
God bless.
And then I'd smoke cigarettes in between. I had a cigar. I just lit that up.
You got to cool off a Black and Milds.
It was like, just serving. I had a beer and a bourbon in front of me at all times. Or like just. So like, I liked kind of the relationships I was making with these people just coming and going, like you're just getting little glimpses into their lives and then they disappear. This woman sits down at the table. Her husband's like nervously standing behind her. Every time she wins like more than $25, he takes it and puts it in his pocket to like try to make the money back that they're making. These two girls sat next to us on like either side of us and like were using all their money and they ran out of money and like couldn't even get a cab to like go to the airport. There was a woman. And this is like, so this is like kind of some of the shit that I was like, where I'm like, huh, this doesn't seem cool. Where there's like this blonde girl sits down at the edge of the table playing very friendly, very nice, but clearly drunk, like clearly very drunk, just kept putting $100 bills on the table, kept busting over and over again. And I'm like, at some point, is someone going to fucking say maybe we shouldn't be taking this woman's money? But lo and behold, they don't give a flying fuck. Yeah. Like, they'll just take all your money off. That's Vegas. I mean, you have to have some personal responsibility. Nonetheless, the best story of the second night was this big drunk guy with a tray of chips, more than everyone else at the table had on them. We probably had maybe $600 or $700 combined between like six players. Like, no one had any money. We were just playing for fun. This guy comes up. He probably has $1,000 or more. Takes half of his. He takes half of him. Just puts it in his first position. Plays a game. Loses. Busts. Then takes the other half. Puts it down. Wins. And then just puts all his chips back in and walks away from the table. And never see that guy again. I saw that guy for a minute and a half. Lose all of his money. Then win all of his money back. And then he went to bed, presumably, or something like that.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's looking for the table. It's hot.
All these. It's like so. And his friends were being like, "Come on, man!" Like he was totally bombed, and they were like not helping him really at all. And I just kind of like dug the vibe, you know, like as long as you're not getting too deep into it. I lost like $300 over the weekend.
Yeah.
Not really a big deal. Right. There are people that are losing that left, right and center on one hand. They're losing that in a fraction of a hand. I mean, I've heard stories of people losing asinine amounts of money, like unheard of amounts of money, tens of thousands of dollars, you know, at like people that, you know, like, well, not what we would know, but people like in real life, like are losing everything.
Oh, no. Yeah. Famous. You hear like famous people that have a lot of money and have a gambling problem. That's how they lose it all.
Yeah. Right? But that was the first time in me where I'm like, I never understood like why, you know? And then I was like, but as long as you keep it under in check, I'm not trying to win. That's like really not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to just survive long enough to have fun, long enough to meet people and smoke and drink for free. You're drinking for free, you know, like you can drink all night basically for free. Just giving them little tips, you building camaraderie, people around you and stuff like that. And I'm like, I like this. This is fun. As long as I keep it in check, I don't give a fuck if I win $200 a night, the cost of doing business or sitting at this table for 5 hours, you know, like not really a big deal. You sit out a few hands. If you're losing, you kind of get a read for the table. I enjoyed it. So I was curious, like what you guys think of like of gambling in general, because like I play fantasy football and that is technically gambling as well, or just gambling in Vegas. And if you guys get into that and what game you play and what you enjoy, because I really got to give it up to Erin because she really introduced me to blackjack. I thought that was a simple game that everyone understood and was easy to play. And it is not. It is apparently a low return game.
Yeah, it's
but it is a safe game and a fun game. And I liked it. And like when you hit 21, when they like,
oh,
like or when you split, like I split a card, like I got two sixes, I split them and then I got another six and I split that. And then I scored like two aces and a queen, and they had like a three show or whatever, and I won like fucking like in one hand like $70. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah,
you know, like you feel that exhilaration, but then like that low as well when you lose all your money and you eventually bust. But then I gotta be honest with you, the end of the night, we were there 4 or 5 in the morning, I'm ready to bust. Like, I put all my shit, like $50 left of chips, I'm just gonna play them all. I gotta go to bed. You know, so like I wasn't even like trying.
You
to like,
left with the money.
I know, but it was just like, you know what, like whatever. Let's see what happens. If I double up, then I get some of my money back, and now like, it's really not the end of the world. Or whatever. So I what I'm saying is, I get it. I enjoyed it. So I want to hear your guys' stories.
I wish I got it more. I like blackjack fine. I had a similar experience in St. Louis at a bachelor party on the riverboat down there, where I sat down at a good table, and it was one where the guy next to me saw me struggling and then started like coaching me. I think actually it started when he got mad at me for taking his card. Yeah. It was something where I shouldn't have hit on what I hit on, but I wanted to hit. And then that was the card he needed. And he was like, what the fuck, man? And then he's like, so he explained it. And like, there was one point where I'm like, and this is like St. Louis or whatever. And it's like, again, like a $5 table where I'm like, all right, hit. And then he goes, no, you don't want to hit on that. And like, she started to give me the card. Like, it was already down. And she's like, do you want me to take it back? I'm like, yeah. And so like, it was like to that thing. And like, I walked away with $50 and I thought that was awesome. You know what I mean? For not doing it. But the time to commit to learn it, to be good at it and stuff, because it is intimidating to sit down at some tables, because you're not always going to get like a group that wants to help you learn or play with you. It is that they're serious, and if they will get mad if you fuck up what they're doing and all these other stuff.
Yeah, sitting in the first position apparently is the worst place to sit in blackjack, because you can fuck everyone at the table.
Yeah, so I enjoy it when we go. For Vegas, it's I'll never forget when Brudvig and I went to Vegas for the first time. It was a Warner Brothers event where they were showing a million games. It's where they revealed DC versus Mortal Kombat.
Okay.
And I think you were there. I touched you because I think we were doing something.
Was that when Amy Doe was there too?
No, because that was UFC and that wasn't a Warner Brothers game. So maybe I'm completely wrong.
I tortured that poor girl.
I know you did. I remember. That was my first real memory of you, where she walked away all in a huff. And I'm like, why did you do that? You're like, just because. I'm like, damn, Nick. Mr. Scarpino.
She used to mess with me a lot, too.
No, she didn't. That's
a
lot totally
of give and take there.
So, but I remember being there and Brudvig doing that thing where I'm going to play this. You know, it was like he's going to play penny slots or whatever the hell it was. And I just remember, like, it was like, you know, the first 6 months at IGN, I'm like, well, I'm so broke. There's no way for me to afford to play, to get a drink. I'm going to go to bed. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't do it. And so when we've been back there, whether it's PSX in, 2014, or I was just there not too long ago with Poe. Poe was doing a conference there. And both of those times, it was like, I'm walking through and I have the money to spend now, but I don't want to sit down for a blackjack because I've forgotten everything I learned from that trip or whatever. And then I look for a slot machine that would be comical if I won. So the Britney Spears, the Ghostbusters, you know what I mean? Like something that would have a connection where I'm like, it'd be awesome to sit down and put in $5 and win like the jackpot on the Ghostbusters machine. Like that's, rat. Doesn't happen, of course. I always walk away with
Ghostbusters, Britney Spears, the tent poles.
Have you seen the Britney Spears machine?
No, I haven't.
It's like getting in the Animus now. Like you get into this like chair like this and you look up and it's like this full body weird ass thing that curves around the back of you and you look at it and Britney dances and does stuff, shows things.
It's the actual, what's funny is too, it's the actual Britney. She's just behind glass. You put
a quarter in,
she's, oh baby, baby. How was I supposed?
Oh God.
So I just play those kind of machines. I wish I understood roulette better. You know what I mean? Like I always think it'd be cool, like, you know, to walk in every time I go to Vegas, maybe, and I have done it zero times, but every time I go to Vegas, it'd be cool to walk in and be like $100 on black for one thing. And then whatever happens, just walk away. But I can't part with $100 that easily. I did when I was, maybe it was PSX, if that makes sense. I can't remember the timing anymore, but we were there for Vegas one time when it was a Mizzou game. And I went and bet on Mizzou. And they're like, do you want them to cover the spread? And I'm like, I don't even know what that means. I'm like, just straight up. Like, you want them straight? They're like, all right, fucking, you know, and I lost all my money on that, of course.
I'm kind of with you, right? Where like, first off, I'm surprised, Colin, that you don't know more about blackjack, because there is a tremendous amount of strategy and like just understanding. It's a pretty deep game when you get into
it. It's shockingly deep. I had no idea.
It all changes depending on how many people are at the table and what the dealer's doing and all
and
that
how
stuff.
Many decks you're playing with
how many
or
decks
whatever
you're playing with.
Yeah, it's crazy. I had no idea.
Yeah,
it's
but I can honestly say that I'm the world's worst gambler.
Oh yeah,
I'm the guy that will lose all of his money, but for some odd reason I take everyone else's bad luck. So if you gamble with me, you'll win. I will lose. So like, my friends love going to Vegas with me because they're like, let's go, and I'm like, I don't want to do this, and they're like, we'll buy you drinks for the rest of the trip, but just let's go. And I'll drop like $500 and they'll be up like 2,000. It'll be ridiculous. I just don't, you have to have a killer instinct to be a gambler, like an actual gambler, to go and gamble and have fun. You're like, okay, there's a difference between saying I'm gonna pull out $200 and if I lose $200, not a big deal, and saying I'm going to double my bet every single hand until I win.
Yeah.
And then go back down to zero and do that again. Like, I have friends that do that. They come with like $5,000 to $10,000 and bet $100, lose $200, lose $300, like $400, lose $800, win, great, I'm back and I'm up, you know. And they do crazy shit like that where you're like, how long are you going to be up for? Like, do I have to come pull you away? Is there like a rule that we have to institute here where I come pull you away after a certain point? And they're like, no, this is fun. But I've seen those same friends come back from Vegas really, really destroyed because they lost all their money. And that happens more often than not. Like, I had a good buddy of mine that used to, like, I'd be like, where'd you go this weekend? He's like, nowhere. I'm like, did you fucking drive to Vegas? And he's like, yeah, I had to gamble. And that's like, becomes dangerous is that I obviously have a pretty highly addictive personality, right?
No.
Yeah. I mean, I love coffee, love cigarettes, love heroin. can't get enough of the opiates.
So we're switching it over to heroin. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's supposed to be cocaine. Yeah, I didn't tell you. It's cocaine's too expensive now. Sure. I'm going to go with the H.
I gotcha.
No, but you know, the cigarettes were a huge problem for me and as was food. And so the idea of gambling to me is scary because I don't like the idea of becoming addicted to something like that because that can actually ruin your life. Not that cigarettes can't ruin your life. They can end your life, but it's a much slower demise, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can smoke till you're well into your 70s, 80s and still be okay and then drop dead of a heart attack. But at least you've had all that time. Whereas gambling, I could probably whittle through what I've managed to save up to this point in a night if I wanted to.
Oh, sure.
Like easily.
One hand.
And to Colin's earlier point, these casinos don't make it hard for you. They don't give a fuck if you're drunk or not. They don't care if you've got a mortgage.
They really don't. They don't give a fuck. And that's great. I mean, that's kind of like what
it's not great. It's completely insidious and it's horrible.
But that's what Vegas is, right? Like that. Like that's kind of what I've come to terms with is like Vegas will just eat you alive if you let it. That's just the way it is.
Every single time I go to Vegas, feel alive. I go home.
It's all about personal responsibility. So I did feel bad for that one girl because I was just like, I didn't know her at all, but I almost wanted to be like, you should not do this. Like, what are you doing? You know, like you don't even know what you're playing. You don't even know what you're doing. You know, like. But who am I to say that's where she can, she's a grown person. She can do that herself. It's just, yeah. Like the big rule is if you don't play big, you can't lose big or win big. So like, I'm fine in that space, you know, like if I lose $300 over a weekend, it's like really not a big deal, you know, like it's really not. So especially compared to like the stories you're telling, I know people that have those same stories.
Yeah.
It's bad. That like, they're like, you cannot, it's not even worth gambling. If you're not gambling $100 to $200 at a hand, you know, or $300 in a hand, it's just not worth it, you know, because like you're just going to stay in the same space over and over again. If you win $15 at a blackjack table, and you win another $50, you have $30, you know, like,
right.
If you win, put $300 down, you're up $300 and then you pay that again, you're up $600. And it's like, and I'm like, I get it. I understand that. And that is true. And if you play like that, where you're like the war of escalation that you're talking about, it's actually maybe not a terrible way to play if you have the money, because like you probably can walk away even if you're smart, or even up if you're smart. If you just keep playing those big hands, you will eventually probably win.
Right.
Especially if you're playing something like roulette or something, you know, craps or something like that. But like, I don't know. I understood it for the first time. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And not for the first time. I enjoyed it when we went in December actually too. But this was the first time where I was like, she's trying to, like, I'm asking questions. I'm observing. I'm talking to the pit boss. I'm like, asking like, why can't I have my phone on the table? What are you doing when you put the cards in that little mirror thing? You know, sure. Like, what are you like? Cards. Yeah, like, and I'm like, so, and I'm like, okay, so you're seeing if you have 21 reg right off the bat. I'm like, so do you know what you're playing with if you do that? Like every time, it's like, no, you only see an icon on the card that tells you have it. I don't know what I'm playing with at all. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Why you should blow smoke behind you instead of up when you're smoking at a table. Like why should you
blow behind you?
Like I think it has to do with the cameras and all those kinds of things and all that kind of stuff. Like why they're like very carefully spreading money across the table and like saying it out loud when they're like giving you like chips and all stuff. I'm like, this is quite
yeah, but
fascinating.
All that terrifies me, right? There's a reason behind all that. It's because people try to cheat and they get like dragged into the back room and their legs broken. Like that's, Vegas is a seriously fucked up town where anything really is possible and probably shouldn't be, because left to our own devices, human beings are idiots. We're all dumb and we all do stupid shit when there's no rules. And Vegas is a place where there's pretty much no rules. Having said that, I've dropped way more money on partying in Vegas than I have ever gambling.
Oh, yeah, me too. Staying and eating there is way more expensive than gambling.
You can go to a bar or a club and get bottle service and spend $1,000 like just to get the table, you know, so. I'm not saying, you know, if you want to go drop $200 on a table, what you're talking about is an experience. And you had
That's exactly what I'm saying.
You weren't gambling, though.
No. Neither of us were really gambling the way you gamble.
You were just
there.
having a fun time, a good experience. And to be honest, if you had drunk in a bar for 4 hours, you just probably spent more than $200.
Yeah, no, so exactly. So I'm thankful to her for introducing me to that. But I'm also really super kind of fascinated about it. I mean, like for the first time, it was the first vacation I had gone on in a long time. The first place where I went where I'm like, I don't really want to leave in like a really long time. Like where I'm like usually like when we go away on trips for work or where we go, even when I go on some vacations, I'm like, I'm ready to get the fuck out of here. Like I want to go back home and just be in my element. And this is the time where I'm like, I could stay here like another week.
Yeah.
That's the funniest thing about this is that you Colin Moriarty is happy that he spent $300 for a social experience meeting random people.
Yeah.
Wow. Outside of his home.
Holy shit.
I don't know who you are. Have you checked to make sure it's still our Colin? Did you do a DNA swab?
People didn't know him. They didn't want to talk to him about Vita. So that was fine.
Oh, fair enough.
That was, I think this has to do with what we were talking about before with the experience of dating someone that understands you, at least changes the dynamic of your life a little bit for the better.
Like, she's really brought you out of your, What's the turn of phrase?
Shell,
thank you. I was going to say skin.
You got all the way there. She's pulled you out of your skin.
She has, though. I mean, granted, I don't think you're going to be a world traveler anytime soon, but the fact that you're able to go on a trip like that, enjoy Vegas, be at peace with that whole experience and actually enjoy yourself.
It was awesome.
It's awesome.
We
that's what it's about,
We were at the pool for hours during the day, and then we go get dinner, and then we go to the casinos. Like, this is fucking awesome.
I love it, yeah.
I was just laying there writing and reading at the pool, observing. That's where I came up with the idea for another new thing I'm writing, which I'm super excited about. And it was just a nice experience. So I wanted to share with you guys, see if you guys have any anecdotes as well.
Tim, did you say anything about gambling?
No, I was 8 years old.
Pure one.
It was like a freaking weird little festival thing. It was kind of like one of those Chuck E. Cheese situations where there's like all the arcade games with tickets and stuff. But then there was also one that for some reason the little kids play that was a pachinko machine type thing where little ball would fall. Mm-hmm. And if it fell, you could win money from it. And I remember playing to get the tickets. There was a bunch of James Bond trading cards. I was 8 and I wanted them really bad. And I kept getting money, using the tokens, trying to figure out, walking around with Kevin, trying to figure out which game gave us the most tickets for the least amount of tokens we were using, whatever. It's the thing with the lights that go around. You have to stop it when it's in the lights. Everyone knows that. Do that a whole bunch of times and get the tickets. But then I would I'd be like, all right, cool. We don't have enough tickets or enough tokens to get enough tickets to get the James Bond things. But instead of using this dollar to do this, let's do the dollar to get the pachinko thing to win more dollars. And it became this whole thing of getting more money to fund more tokens, to get more tickets, to get these James Bond things. And somewhere along the way, I'm like, how much would it cost to just buy James Bond cards?
Yeah.
This is stupid.
Yeah.
I stopped there. And from then on, I'm like, I'm not gambling. This is dumb. There's better ways to make money. And that's why one day, when I have time to look into stocks, I'm going to be a master of stocks. But until then, I'm going to allow Kevin to do that for me.
Stocks is gambling, though.
No, I know. But that's the thing, though. It's like, I'm not going to do it unless I know what I'm doing. I want to commit to it. It's like what you're talking about. Like, there's a right way to do it. I'm not going to commit to learning how to gamble and be a blackjack master. Nah, but a stock master? Mark my words, one day, me and Kevin are going to take over the goddamn world.
Tim, you know what you should never gamble on?
What, Greg?
A good shave.
Damn.
This topic was brought to you by Harry's. Stop compromising on your shave and get started with Harry's. For far too long, you've either paid too much for a comfortable shave, or you've settled for a low-priced but low-quality razor. Harry's offers something you've never had before, a great shave at a fair price. Harry's makes its own high-quality razors, cuts out the middleman, and ships them directly to you for half the price of the leading brand. Good shave, good price. It's simple. Get the best of both worlds with Harry's. Harry's is the only shaving company that has amazing quality and low prices. Harry's makes just one razor with all you need for a close, comfortable shave. 5 German crafted blades, flex hinge, and a lubricating strip. Quality guaranteed, a full refund if you're not happy. Tim, tell me about it.
So here's the deal, Greg.
Yeah.
Recently we were at E3.
Right.
Shaved. I look damn good.
You did.
Then we went to RTX. VidCon was in between all of those. I look damn good. I was shaved and good. Right now, you see this?
Yeah. Don't look damn good.
I need to get harried. That's what I need to do. Because we're about to go to Comic-Con and
Next week.
I'm in that weird place where it's like I want to get a haircut, but then I need to look good for other stuff that we're doing after. Oh, Let's Play Live Chicago. We can talk about that.
Yeah, we can talk about that now.
Yeah. So I don't know. I need to figure this out. But the one thing I do know is I'm going to shave.
Okay.
This week and next week and the week after that, because you can always shave and look good. Thanks to Harry's.
Harry's starter set, Call the Truman, is a great option for new customers. An amazing deal. For just $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shave cream, and 3 of Harry's 5 blade German engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of the show. Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with the promo code KINDAFUNNY, all one word. Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman set. That's Harry's, HARRYS.com. Enter the code KINDAFUNNY at checkout to get $5 off and help support this show. Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today. There is a link in the description below. Tim.
What's up, everybody?
What's topic?
My topic is proposals. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is kind of fitting.
The gamut.
For this episode.
The first dates.
We've kind of been everywhere.
So gambling.
There you go. So I am a 26. 27.
Oh my God, now are you 27. Proposing on this episode?
Did I just turn 20? Yeah. 12 days ago, I turned 27. That's weird as shit. Mm-hmm. Kevin's 26.
Yeah.
I have not yet hit that point in my life where everybody I know is getting married.
Sure.
It's now happening. So,
so now we're hitting the
right now.
We're hitting the stride.
It was like 12 days ago hitting. It's like, fuck it. Kevin's like, whatever. I'm proposing to Paula. He did that shit at Kinda Funny Live. So now I'm planning that wedding. Then my other friend, James, one of my best friends, proposed to Missy. Mentioned them earlier. They were the people that, I don't remember what. Oh, Gia's best friend. That's gotcha. What it was. Yeah. They proposed a couple days ago. I helped with that.
How did that go?
It went fantastic. He had this whole plan. I filmed it because that's what I do. And it was great.
Was she surprised? Can yes. you tell us about the plan? Do you
yes,
want to
I
talk?
Totally can. I can.
Okay. She was even more surprised when she's like, is that Tim's car? And James is like, no. And then she looks a little over to the left. And it's like, I can only imagine what she saw was just nothing but street and then a fake bush that Tim was hiding behind with
his
camera.
Is this a real story?
Parts of it are true. Parts okay. of it are embellished a little bit.
That was totally true.
Tim's hiding in a bush.
It was a real bush, not a fake bush. That's the only difference. So to go through the plan, they've been together for 9.5 years, which is a long time.
Long time. Since could have had a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, they could have. they met my senior.
Could have had 9 babies.
Senior year of high school. So it was a long ass time ago. They've been together ever since, and it's been wonderful and great and all that stuff. But my friend James is a little bit of a like spaz when it comes to stuff, and sure. he doesn't plan things well, and he's very, very particular. Now they are the Disney couple. They're the people that I go to Disneyland okay. with. They know that straight like the back of their hands, and I fucking love them. They're great. They're also obsessed with baseball. James had baseball dreams. They didn't work out, but now he's a baseball coach for our high school, which is kind of cool. It's his whole thing, right?
Lowell.
Yes.
The fighting Lowell.
Cardinals.
Long, okay.
The Cardinals, yeah. They were the Indians, and then they had to. They're
no,
like, we're
not,
doing
that.
We're not doing that. So anyways, he did this thing where every year he would, on their anniversary, give them two cards, where one card was like, he'd write on both of them, but one was like more of a jokey thing, and one was more of a heartfelt, romantic thing, which he's not the romantic type.
Right.
So that was always something she looked forward to. Now, 6 years into the relationship, he just straight stopped and just didn't get out of the cards anymore and was just like, whatever. Now, she has all these cards like framed in her house, so it's like, James, come on. It's
yes,
like the littlest thing you can fucking do. But he's James. He has baseball things to do and stuff. And
sure.
He has to go to Disneyland, plan like the fourth trip this year. I get it. Anyway, so his idea for the proposal, super simple. She's the type of person, she didn't want to be this whole big, you know,
hullabaloo.
Because certain girls definitely want that. They want to be blown the fuck out. She did not want that. She just wanted him to like put thought into it,
right.
you know? And he definitely did. So he got her 8 cards to make up for it. And, you know, 4 of them jokey, 4 of them serious, wrote all of them and had them kind of be this like speech that kind of built up over the, all the different cards. The plan was to get him to get her to this bridge over in SF.
One of the millions in America.
Yes. Where they had their first kiss 9 years ago. They haven't been there since then. So immediately the moment she gets on the bridge, she's going to think something is up. Right.
Sure.
So we already knew it's like that is the surprise moment is just getting her to the bridge. Portillo is just. He was just twerking there for a second, and then he just stopped. Anyway, so the plan got a little convoluted because it's James, and he's really bad at planning things, where I'm like, I need to, like, he wanted me to film it. And I'm like, of course, I'm going to film it. This obviously goes back to my legacy of filming people, like how to ask a girl out and filming everything. But back in high school, it's what I used to do. That's what got me doing what I'm doing now, is like proposals, but it's like people asking people to prom and all that shit. You can find those videos online somewhere, my MySpace page.
Google prom girls.
Just Tim Getty's prom girls.
This is what you get.
Anyways, so it was complicated because he was just like, I had to get him mic'd up, right? But it's like hard to get him mic'd up when he's with her. So he texted me when he was at dinner and he was like, come to Stonestown, the mall, meet me, and we'll go to the bathroom and mic him up. So I did that shit, get them all mic'd. She had no idea, but I just love it because they were planning to go to Olive Garden, which is obviously the most romantic. It's like, you're
when
about
you're
to
there, your family.
Let's go to Olive Garden.
But it's fine Italian food.
It was a 45-minute wait, so we said, fuck it, let's go to Great Steak and Potato.
Really playing with the expectations.
So they did that, and I'm like, I fucking love you, Jay.
A proposal she'll remember forever.
Forever. So anyway, so she was, they're all in their baseball gear and stuff, which is so perfectly them. And I go to this place to set the camera up, and I'm literally on an island in the middle of a busy street in bushes. just with the camera, just like waiting for this fucking bridge. And he gave me this thing of flowers and all the cards to kind of distribute. So I did that, put them on the bridge. They start walking on. It's pitch black. So I'm just a bushman.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, are you doing like night vision camera here?
No, we just have a fancy ass camera that can see in the dark, which is fantastic. But I'm there and these random dudes walk and they see these things, flowers. And I had from across the street be like, no, no, leave them alone. And they're just like, fucking bush dude, that's hella weird.
Like, did that
like,
bush just talk to us?
Yeah, like, so whatever.
Oh my god, God is coming to talk to us.
If it lights on fire, it's gonna get super biblical.
They leave it alone, they come, and it worked great. Everything was all good. And then he does the whole thing, reads it, and she was all happy about it and cried and all that stuff. And yay, happily ever after. And it's cool. But yeah, it was during the final moments where she like looks over, she's like, is that how? She's like, how'd you do this? He was like, I got my ways. She's like, is that Tim's car? He goes, nope.
Nope.
And she goes, really? He goes, nah. And she goes, it looks like it. And he goes, yeah, it does. Then I'm like, why are you lying at this point? Like,
she's
going
to see the video.
But,
and
then,
clearly...
but then, yeah, then she seriously right there just goes, oh. And just like freaks out when she sees me in the bush.
That was hilarious.
And at that moment, it was just like, it was just funny. We're all laughing about it. But my favorite thing was her walking on the bridge, and it's like when she's on the bridge, she thought it was happening, and you could tell that she was like, oh shit, like this is about to go down. She'd been waiting for this for years at this point. And the biggest surprise is that he actually got the ring. Like, no one thought he would actually do it because he's not good at planning, but he did. We're all proud of him, and that's great.
You do have to sort of have that. That is like the one thing that you should probably have.
Exactly.
And he, to marry you.
He eventually got it, and it was all great. But the funniest moment is you can see it on video. She's walking and there's a moment where she lets her hair down because it's right where they had their first kiss. And that was where she's like, this is where it's about to happen. If I'm being filmed, I want to look good.
That's awesome. That's
so
awesome.
She's straight up. You just see her do it. I'm like, that's fantastic.
I love that. It's telling. I'm not saying good or bad, but it's telling that all of the girls in that circle assume they're being filmed at any given second. In any given day.
Sure.
Am I crazy to think that?
No, I think they know this group.
They're just conditioned to believe that.
Yeah.
And they're hella happy because right after that, we got all our friends together to do a viewing party of the video. And it was awesome. And they fucking loved that shit.
Kevin just looked
at me like,
Kevin's
super offended he wasn't invited.
No, you were off doing your own wedding shit.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You broke his little heart. You better go hug him after this.
Sir. Anyway.
And for you, sir.
But I kind of wanted to talk about proposals. I wasn't planning on explaining that whole story.
That was a good story.
And I admit that it's not like the best story.
It's a good story.
It is what it is. But like my thing with that is it's so fitting for them. Like it is so awesome for them. And I think that's kind of the coolest thing about proposals is it's not always about just go big and go crazy. It's about what makes sense for who you are. How did you propose?
I'll be honest, Tim. Before I get to that, I'm terrified if the day comes where you decide to ask for Gia's hand in marriage. Not because I don't think you guys are, I think you guys are a phenomenal couple. I think you'll be happy for the rest of your life. I just don't, I know I can't say no, and you're going to ask me to do something absurd. I know it. And I have a feeling you're gonna have me dress up as Genuine and probably do Pony to some degree because that's what you always do whenever we do these public.
Because that's what you always do. Yeah, I guess you're right. But that's a perfect point though. Like with Gia though, she doesn't want the big shit. I know she doesn't want the big shit.
I don't think Paul wanted the big shit either. And Kevin was like, I'm gonna give it to her no matter what.
Kevin's
mental abuse.
Kevin does things for Kevin, and Kevin knows what Paula wants. Paula doesn't know what Paula wants. That's the difference, right, Kev?
Look,
yeah,
old school male, Kevin. Would have fit in right in the 40s.
You have
50s.
Old school male Kevin with his fucking scabbed up arm from wrestling Greg Geddes for no reason.
He fell off his bike.
It's funny that way. Papers this morning.
but Kevin doing it kind of funny live, like that is a very appropriate thing for them.
That was an awesome opportunity too. So like, what better? That was such a great night and such a beautiful moment. My wife obviously is on the opposite side of that, right? She wanted something small. So what I did, I just took her up to a really nice hotel in Napa. It was, probably way more than I could have afforded at the time, but it was right. I had the ring ready and I just said, hey, I want to take you away for the weekend. At which point she absolutely unequivocally knew that I was asking her to marry her because I've never done that before and never once done it since.
Never. You guys go away, but she's the instigator.
She's the instigator, but she's always the one like, hey, we need to get out of the city. Cause I'm always the one that's like, I'm going to grind and work. So like really, really hard until I am just an asshole to be around. And she's like, well, before we get to that point, let's go out of town. So she knew something was up and I took her to a really, really beautiful hotel in Napa. made dinner reservations. I made reservations for everything, so I knew that's what she wanted because my wife is a planner. Like, if you don't have a reservation, she's like, well, everything's ruined this year. Everything. When we were getting ready, she was about to leave, and I was like, you ready to go to dinner? She's like, yeah. And I was like, wait, you look perfect. There's just one thing missing.
Damn.
And she was like,
that's good.
And I got down on my knee, and she just immediately started crying.
Awesome.
And I can't remember exactly what I said, but I was like, you make me really happy, and I wanted to. I want to make you happy for the rest of your life. Will you be my wife? And I gave her the ring, and she put it on and then was like silent for like, I shit you not, an hour and a half. And I'm like, I'm going to assume this is a yes. She did it like a nod thing, and we hugged and kissed, but she was like in shock the whole night. And I'm like, you are happy, right? And she was like, yeah, I'm super happy right now. This was unexpected this whole weekend, and it was really crazy. And then after like 2 hours later, it was back to goofing off and jokes and
God, that's
fun.
So awesome. I think that's the key, though. It's the playing with expectations. And I think that the surprise is the most important part of it. And it's not so much a surprise that it's happening, because I feel like at the point you're doing it,
they know.
They know, you know? So like with my friends, I thought it was really interesting because the moment that she was on the bridge, it was like, you could tell. She's like, this is happening. And then when she took her hair down, I was like, this is definitely in her mind.
Engagement is happening.
But what was funny is then James started it. Like, when she saw the flowers, she's like, what's going on? And James was just like, you know, like, I just want to show you how much I appreciate you for like coaching with me and blah, blah, blah. So that her guard was down at that point. She was like, oh, he's just doing something nice, because let's be real, he owes her so much for everything that he puts her through.
He's a dude.
So I was, yeah, exactly. So I'm like, so that's great. But then it was like, yeah, then as the cards built up, then there was that other trigger moment of like, oh fuck, it is happening. Like, it is happening right now. And I loved it because she didn't even say yes. It was just like, he gets down on his knee and he asks, and she just goes, yeah. Like, just so like, duh. And it's so funny. Like, I love that.
It's fun. It's a very unique feeling doing that, because it's you're committing to something real. And like, so much of life, not that marriages have to or often do last forever, but there's a very important part of you that like almost, I don't want to say becomes a man at that point, but you are saying to someone else, like, I'm committing to you for our lives. And that's a pretty important and amazingly respectful thing to do to someone. And it's scary as shit, too. The scary thing is not asking the girl. The scary thing is when you take all that money and put it down on the ring, and you know that no matter what, you can't get that back. Because even if you have the ring, it's not like you can be like, I don't want this anymore, and give it back to him and they give you your money. They're just like, nah, dude.
Nah, dude.
It's not happening anymore, right?
Yeah.
So I think the gut-wrenching moment for me, like the gut check moment, was when I had to put it down, they wanted half down on the ring. And I was like, and I did the whole experiment where I had to figure out how much I could, how big of a diamond I could get versus the clarity, versus the color, versus the cut, all of the four C's, whatever they call it. And I finally was like, I'm just going to go for broke on this thing and get her what I know she wants, because if it does work, end up working out, she's going to be looking at it the rest of her life. And I was right, because every day, literally, I catch my wife, like, just like glance down at the ring, kind of play with it a little bit. And in my brain, she's thinking about how much she loves me. In reality, she's thinking, that would look great with like two other bands on it. With some diamonds probably, but I don't know. To each his own.
That's so funny.
But yeah, it was a very powerful moment in my life.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I enjoy so much about it is proposals are honestly, I think, one of my favorite things in the entire world, where it's just like, I always talk about how much I love E3 for the hype around it and for the announcements and stuff. And I feel like, you know, weddings are great because all it is a celebration of people loving each other. And that's super awesome. And I like positive things. And I think that proposals are so cool because it's trying to surprise somebody and make them happier than they've ever been. Mm. And that to me is like such a beautiful thing. And there's such an art that goes into that, if you want there to be. And you, again, like I don't think it needs to be a blown out crazy thing for it to have that, the resonance. I think in a lot of ways, sometimes even something really simple can mean the world, you know? But I'll get just sucked down these holes where I'm looking on YouTube, like just typing in proposal and just like looking at videos of stuff, because it's like, I love seeing the amount of thought and effort and passion people put into other human beings and into a future that they're trying to have together. And like seeing people, like their reactions and like just crying and just like the shock of like, oh my God, it's happening. Something that they've expected to happen for so long. It's like, there's nothing else like it. And I just think that it's really, to take this in a kind of dark way, it's like, you know, funerals have this thing where people go and they give speeches about how much these people meant to them. Mm-hmm. And I've always found that really interesting, where it's like, you know, that it's such a positive thing during such a negative moment. But like, there is nothing more real than those speeches. Though, like, that is, some, you're talking about somebody that you're never going to be able to see again, but you're talking about them giving them every single thing you have. And the only other thing in life that is like that is weddings and is the proposal, really. Like, the proposal is kind of the opposite of a funeral speech. It's the, like, the funeral is closing the door on your life, whereas the proposal is, I'm trying to open a door to the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's so, so, so cool. And I've always had an infatuation with it and the dynamics of how it all works and that type of stuff and filming it. So if you need me to film your proposal, let me know.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Game Over Greggy Show. Each and every week, four, sometimes five best friends gather on this table. Each bring a random topic discussion for your amusement. If you like that, head over to patreon.com/kindoffunny where you can toss us a few bucks, get every episode early, get exclusives, and get a whole bunch of cool perks. But if you have no bucks to toss, no big deal, head over to youtube.com/kindoffunny where we post the show topic by topic, day by day, until it's one big video in MP3 on Friday. Gentlemen, thank you. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.